You're now in the huddle with Coach Calls Timeout, the podcast that dissects the mind of a different basketball coach every episode. We uncover what makes them successful and how their story translates to your coaching journey. Let's unlock your team's potential together. Welcome to episode 19 of the Coach Calls Timeout podcast. Dan Jonker here. Today's guest is Justin Gunter, the head coach of the men's basketball team at the University of Waterloo. Justin's coaching journey is pretty amazing. The coaching seed was planted during a year off before his playing days were over. That seed and his love for basketball grew, and he realized that he needed to stay involved with the game of basketball. As a point guard, he was always a coach on the floor. When he was done playing, he spent years as an assistant coach with his alma mater, McMaster University, and he was hired last year to lead his first men's basketball program at the University of Waterloo. My brother Brian handles the interview with Justin, and the guys get into some great discussions about building a program, recruiting, the expectations of a student athlete, coaching mentors, and they even reminisce about the time Justin lit up Brian's high school team back in the day. Let's get right to it. As Dan has said, it's Brian with you for episode 19 of the Coach Calls Timeout podcast, and today I'm with the University of Waterloo head coach for the men's basketball team, Justin Gunter. And Justin, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on, Brian. Appreciate it.
We talk coaching on this podcast, and you're in a unique situation. You're a younger, first-time head coach at this level, and you had a great recruiting class this past offseason, but you've got a younger group. I guess you got a couple of veterans kind of helping transist here, but you got a younger group in general. What's been the biggest challenge for you in your first year and a half here taking a program that hasn't had recent success and trying to get things going under the way you want it built?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge has just been sort of trying to establish, you know, the culture that we want to bring, you know, as a coaching staff and what we want our program to aspire to be. We have, you know, last year I got the job really late in the process and we weren't able to recruit. So we were kind of, you know, left. We had the team that was kind of provided to us more or less. And, you know, the guys last year, they worked really, really hard. And, you know, we weren't the most talented team and we didn't have a lot of success, but the guys worked really, really hard. And it sort of helped lay the foundation for what we want to build, which, you know, there's accountability and there's communication and being a great teammate. Those are kind of what we want to build this program on. And with bringing sort of trying to meld the fifth years or the vet returning guys and the first year guys, you know, that's been a challenge this year. And you know, with any high school kid, you know how it is coaching young guys. It's getting them to play, practice hard every single day. You know, my first year guys that are playing have no problem when the lights turn on playing hard. They play really hard in games. And, you know, it has taken them a little bit of time to bring it every day in practice. And you know, we're in a unique situation at Waterloo. Not unique, but a situation at Waterloo where, you know, a lot of our first year guys are in engineering, computer science, math. They're in very, very difficult programs. So, you know, they're in class 25, 30 hours a week. And then, you know, we have the demands of weightlifting and travel and, you know, practice and games and everything on top of that. So they're trying to manage all that, and, you know, new social situations. So, and then trying to figure out where they land in the sort of pecking order of our team. You know, our fifth year guys are great. They're great guys, but we got a couple strong personalities in our fifth year guys, which is fine. So, you know, even the first year guys that are playing a lot, they're trying to figure out, you know, I may be playing 30 minutes a game. I may be the starting point guard, but how do I assert myself? How do I voice my, you know, how do I find my voice within the locker room, within the team? You know, cause coach wants me to be a leader, but you know, I also have a strong fifth year personality beside me who does a lot of talking and he does a lot of talk. We're almost like a big brother, small brother sort of thing. And so that's, I think, helping them try to find their way, helping them sort of, you know, get through this first 2-3 months has been the biggest hurdle. You know, and just, you know, realizing that to be successful at this level, it takes a lot more than what it took at high school. And, you know, the guys are starting to realize that, you know, if you want some things to change, you're going to have to change some of your behaviors and, you know, but they've been great. They've worked really hard and, you know, it's been a really fun group to coach, thus far. Really enjoying it. I look forward to coming to the gym every day and they're sort of soaking up all the information we're trying to provide them, which is great.
So you touched on a number of different things that I kind of want to bring out in a little bit more detail. I mean, I said you had a really good young recruiting class, but if you take guys like Ganny and Hodzik and Petrov and Hardy, those are all local guys as well. You talked about, you know, the academics of your school. It's engineering based and high academic school in general, and your recruiting challenges are different than some other schools. How do you sell recruits on what you're trying to do, and how do you target people? I mean, it's good you've tried to keep your local talent home as a starting point. What do you look at recruiting wise, and how do you segregate the guys you know that can fit in academically at your school and the type of people that you want?
Yeah, and so what we do, you know, Troy Stevenson, my assistant coach, and I we do all the recruiting for us, and Troy's great. He knows everyone locally. What we do is, you know, we watch obviously a lot of games, a lot of players, and, you know, just say we see 100 guys that we like, you know, maybe 20 or 30 of them can get into Waterloo, you know, academically over 80%, and that's sort of like bare minimum. And if you want to get in engineering, it's even higher. So our job is to identify those 20 or 30 guys, you know, and then figure out from those 20 or 30 guys that we really like, which guys will fit what we want to build. And you know, so we have to, you know, people look at it as a challenge, and it is a challenge in a sense, but it's also, if you can locate those 20 or 30 guys, and then sort of figure out of those, you know, there's 5 or 7 guys, you can really go after those guys really hard, and you can sell them on the package of playing a varsity sport in the best conference in the country, right? And getting an unbelievable education. And another thing that we have, that not a lot of schools have, is, you know, most of our programs, if not all, have co-op, right? And so we try to put that whole package together where, you know, we'll provide you with some scholarship money up front, you know, AFA money, and then you can work on the back end of that, you know, in your second, third, and fourth year, get a great education, and, you know, you get a chance to play in a great conference at a school that has great history, and that, you know, you're going to be part of the foundation of a rebuild. And, you know, with the local guys last year, with the Hardys and the Petrovs, Nadim, Corbeil, playing time also was important, right? They wanted to play. And so, you know, a lot of the other schools that were recruiting them, you know, have more established programs, and they were going to have to maybe not sit, but they weren't going to start and play 25, 30 minutes a game. So we tried to sell them on the whole package. And that's kind of what we're trying to do here is we're trying to find the well-rounded guy who's going to be here for 4 or 5 years, right? Because academically, if you get guys that can't cut it academically, you're never going to be able to build a good program here. And it's going to be a revolving door. And it's not that, you know, maybe the kids aren't, it's not that they're not trying hard. It's just academically they can't cut it because of the rigors of Waterloo. So we do a lot of homework. It's, you know, we spend a lot of time talking to parents, teachers, coaches, people who know them, just to make sure that, you know, because there's some kids who are 85% students in high school, but they're not really 85% students, right? So trying to find those guys who are, you know, academically inclined, and then trying to sell them on the whole package. And you know, we were lucky in a sense last year that, you know, there was 4 local guys who I thought were really good, who had a chance to play right away, and academically were all really good and looking for stuff that we offered, right? Nadim's an engineer, and Simon's in accounting, and Hardy's in math, Corbeil's in science, like all things that we're known for. We have very strong programs. So I would love to get 3 or 4 local recruits as good as them every year and make my job make my life very, very happy and very good. But that might not happen again, right? Like it's just, that was just good timing, and you know, we're fortunate that we have them, and definitely, you know, excited for the future with these guys as the building blocks of this program.
I guess on the plus side too, though, when you have identified those people and you do get them into the school, you've probably got a focused individual, has a little better organizational skills, time management skills, and you'll probably keep those guys more than other places might.
Absolutely, you know, and that's been what we've noticed so far with most of the first years. They're pretty self-sufficient. They push themselves academically. They know when stuff's due. You know, we try to help them out as much as we can, but they're pretty self-sufficient. And a lot of their programs that they take are 5-year programs. So it lines up perfectly with that, you know, with basketball, staying around for 5 years, you're going to be in school for 5 years. Like let's get your degree, and let's, you know, develop you as a player and a person. And that's what we've seen so far. It's early. We haven't got any, you know, marks back yet because it's only first semester. But so far, you know, so far so good.
And I guess I'm assuming here, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the five-year program is in coordination with the co-op. Is that how that works?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So they end up with somewhere between 4 and 6 co-op terms. So they essentially go all year round. Waterloo is a sort of a 3-term school. So you have, you know, the fall term, which we're in now, then the winter term, and then the spring term, which runs May to August. So we'll have, you know, this summer coming up, I'll have a handful of guys actually in class full time. And I have a handful of guys working in their co-op jobs in the summer. And, you know, the great thing is most of them, if they're in school, they're obviously local. And if they have jobs, most of them get local jobs. So that helps when, you know, our expectation is that they're around in the summer. Well, they're already close because of work or school or whatever. So it makes it easier for us to have a, you know, a program that goes, you know, all year around. And that was one of the changes that we were, you know, one of the first changes we made was when we came in, it was like this, if you want to compete, obviously the bar has been raised by, you know, the Carletons and the Ottawas and the Ryerson's Max and all these other schools across the country. It's like, you can't have this as a 6-month or a 7-month of the year program anymore and be successful at basketball. It's become like an 11, 12-month of the year program sort of thing that you need to do, right? So having our guys around and having them here for 5 years is hopefully going to pay dividends for us as we build the program moving forward in the next couple of years.
Now, at the same time, will there be some co-op terms that actually work through the fall or the winter, so it's during basketball, and then as a result, you don't have a course load to worry about. You're just at work, and then in the summer, you can pick up those classes, or that's when your course load is, when basketball's a little bit lighter then.
Yeah, so that does happen. So you'll have, if you're in the co-op program, you'll work, you know, you'll work in the fall. We have a guy that's working right now, right? And so he's gone all during the day, but, you know, he's at night, he's here for practice, and we practice in the evening anyways because of just the schedule with our engineers and the guys who have the 30 hours of class. We just can't, as much as, you know, every coach would love to have the 1 o'clock in the afternoon practice every day. We can't do that here. So, yeah, it works out and it all evens out at the end of the day, but it's nice when you get a bunch of guys that are working local co-op jobs because, you know, they tend to have a little bit more energy at night and they'll stay and they'll lift and they'll get extra shots up and whatnot because they know they're just going back to work the next day. They don't have to stay up till 2-3 in the morning doing homework or whatever it is.
With us in the OCA or at the college ranks, we're not full-time coaches. So we have real jobs, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so all our practice time is always at night. My complication with that, obviously, is it hinders recruiting.
Right.
You know, it's pretty hard to go see kids play all the time when you're practicing. How does that work for you?
Yeah, so what we do is we practice one day during the week. We practice in the morning. So we have Wednesdays, we have no contact Wednesdays. And we have workouts at 6:30 for half the guys in the morning, and then half the guys come in at 8. So every guy on the team is done by 9:15, 9:30 on Wednesday with a workout, and then they can sort of go about their day as a normal, quote unquote, normal student. So Wednesdays are days when I'm able to get out and recruit. With the local high school scene here, with Wixon and D8, the two leagues here, a lot of their games are at 3 or 4 or 3:30 or 4, whatever, in the afternoon. So I'm able to get out and watch them play if I'm here. The other thing we do is Troy, my assistant coach, who's kind of, you know, kind of our lead assistant coach, he'll miss practice to recruit every once in a while. So we try to make it work. You know, obviously we try to, you know, like I mentioned earlier, try to sort of narrow down the pool of who we're recruiting pretty early in the process, and then go really hard after those guys. You know, successful last year, and we're hoping it's going to be successful this year. So, you know, we're not necessarily watching, you know, 20 different teams play. We might be down to watching 4 or 5 or 6 teams play, but it makes it a challenge sometimes recruiting. Absolutely. But we just try our best to make it work. And so far it's worked out pretty well.
So you mentioned Troy Stevenson a couple of times as your lead assistant.
Yep.
Was that a full-time position for you guys?
No. So Troy's just part-time, you know, hoping that eventually we can make it full-time. Right now he's part-time, but he's a young guy with a ton of energy. He works a full-time job as an engineer, and then he spends countless hours film, recruiting, doing everything else that helps me on a day-to-day basis. He just, you know, eats, drinks, sleeps basketball, and it's great to have a guy around like that who just continuously pushes me and pushes trying to push the program in the right direction. So I wish he was full time. You know, we always joke about if you broke down his honorarium or his pay by the hour, it would be a very, very measly sum of money per hour. But he seems to like it, and it's something he's interested in. So I'm lucky to have him for sure.
How many programs in the CIS, I guess, U Sport now? How many programs do you think have full time assistants? Would it be 50-50? Would it be?
I don't think it's quite 50-50. Like, my guess is probably 30 to maybe 30, maybe 1 in 3 probably have a full time assistant. And you know, the thing about the full time assistant is a lot of them will be quote unquote a full time assistant, but they'll also have to run summer camps in the summer or supervise the weight room, or you know, do some administration stuff. Like, it's 85% or 75% basketball, and then the other 25% of their job is, you know, helping out around the athletic office. At least the full-time assistants that I know, kind of, that's how their kind of salary is based. But I would say, yeah, maybe a third. And I think I bet you if you look back 10 years ago, it's probably double or triple what it was 10 years ago. You probably had 4 or 5 schools 10 years ago that had assistant coach, full-time assistants. Now, my guess, it's just a guess, would be about 15 coaches, 15 of the 47 schools have full-time assistants. It's going in the right direction. I mean, this job, I mean, I'm sure you feel the pinch all the time, right? Like, with you're working full-time and then you're coming in and you feel like you're just chasing your tail all the time. But it would be really nice to have a full-time assistant. It would help with a lot of the tasks that you have to do, because it's, you know, very small percentages actually X's and O's and basketball stuff you're kind of wearing, you know, 10 different hats in this role. So having someone to help take the pressure off would be great. But financially, it's a challenge to figure that out for sure.
I guess in the role that, I mean, as a head coach at your level, and especially without a full-time assistant, you know, there, as you mentioned, there would be a lot of different hats that you're wearing. I imagine you're involved in the community in some aspects, or have to be involved in fundraising or other different types of things. Like, what would a day consist of for you?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of it is, you know, working in the community, both the University of Waterloo community, you know, volunteering for different events that are on campus, trying to get the name of the program and the faces out there. Also within the broader community, working with, you know, the Waterloo Wild Hawks, KW Vipers, Wolverines, and, you know, we work with Special Olympics. And so it's a lot of that community outreach, which is great. And it's very, very important. We also spend a lot of time, you know, building the alumni relations. There's the alumni relations, you know, was a little bit neglected in the past year. And we have amazing alumni here that just, they all just keep saying the same thing. Oh, we want to be asked. We want to be involved. Like, you know, ask us for our feedback. And so we've made a really concerted effort to sort of welcome them back and do different events. But, you know, that takes time and it takes energy and it takes resources. And so we're just sort of scratching the surface, I hope, of what we can eventually build with an alumni in relation. I come from a place in McMaster that has amazing, you know, alumni support and has had amazing alumni support, you know, when I played and so on since I finished playing. But so we're trying to build something similar to that here at Waterloo. And then, you know, during the season, obviously, we're watching a lot of film, talking to recruits, trying to figure out how we're going to score, how we're going to stop people. So the day is busy, and the job can be very consuming and very, you know, if you don't sort of keep yourself in check, it can sort of take over your life. And you know, I'm lucky that I have, you know, an amazing wife that puts up with a lot of my crap and encourages me and supports me, and you know, having a 4-year-old at home also helps, because when you go into a road trip and you come home and you see him, it's all of a sudden not so bad. So you know, the days are busy, but you kind of just have to kind of keep things in perspective that you are moving it forward every day a little bit, and that's the goal, right? It's just trying to move it forward every day a little bit. And you know, it's cliche, but we talk to the young guys about trusting the process, and I know everyone says that, but it's true. If we just stick to a process and we trust it, we keep working towards it, we're going to get the results that we want eventually. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
Let's take a little bit of a step back here and go back to the roots of everything. How did you ultimately end up in coaching? And was it something that you knew you wanted to do when you were finishing up your playing days?
Yeah, I never really thought much about it until my fourth year at McMaster. I took the year off and I did an internship at a local mutual fund company in Burlington, and I wasn't allowed to play. That was the rule at McMaster. If you did a co-op or internship, you couldn't play. And I took the year off and I missed basketball so much. And I didn't think I'd miss basketball that much because I had, like, you know, my third year, we had a good year. We had a very successful season. And I was just like, I'm going to take this year off. And if I don't miss basketball, that's probably a sign that I don't love it as much as I once did or whatever. And I missed it so much. And then when I went back my fifth year to play my last year, we had a lot of success. And, you know, Coach Brazzo really sort of put a lot of faith in me as his point guard that year and really let me sort of direct the offense along with Amos. Actually, Amos Conley was our sort of offensive coordinator. Andrew Sergio was our defensive coordinator. And, you know, I was one of the captains. And you know, Coach Brazzo let me do a lot of things that year. And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm kind of being a coach on the court here. And I kind of always was, but you never really realized it. And I think at that age, I reached sort of a level of maturity where I was like, there's a lot of responsibility here. And I kind of like it. So as soon as I was finished playing, I had no interest in playing anymore. My body was starting to break down and I had a nice career and we'd had a lot of success as a team. So I started coaching at Parkside in my old alma mater, my high school.
Hold on. I'm stopping you right there for a second.
Yeah, okay.
I have to tell everybody this. And you and I have briefly talked about it once before, but when I coached at Assumption in Brantford, senior boys, you were playing at Parkside, and we had a really, really strong team, one of the best teams in the province at the time. And we were at Glenview Park in Cambridge in a tournament, and we ran into this Dundas Parkside team with this little left-handed kid with these glasses. And you torch us, and we're like, what the hell is this, man? Where is this? I got guys going D1. I got other guys. And this kid just goes around, lights us up. And I actually look back today at the score. It was I don't know if you remember it exactly, but it was overtime.
Very high scoring, right?
It was 83-69 in overtime. So,
yeah, like what happened in overtime?
I don't remember the details, but I do remember you had to have scored 35 or more. You torched us.
I played well that day. Your point guard was Paul Petrella, right?
That's right.
For some reason, Paul was one of these guys who I always played well against Brantford point guards. Paul and JS Esposito, I always played well against, and it made no sense because they were great defenders.
Yeah.
And they were bulldogs and they were into you and they were like physical.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I don't know what it was. I always played well against Paul in high school. And then I always played well against JS when he was at Guelph. And I honestly cannot remember, but yeah, your team was stacked. You guys, Tyson Dorsey and, Taryn and then DJ Andres. I remember all this stuff.
Yeah.
That was like 16, 17 years ago. That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. You torched us and it's burnt in my memory. So you just go ahead and keep telling me about how you were at Parkside and
Yeah. So after that, I helped at Parkside for a year and then, that last year, I had a couple close friends, John Oberbeck, Martin Adjai, who were still playing at McMaster. So Coach Razzle said, Adam Steiner was still there. He said, why don't you take a year away? These guys are all in their fifth year. And if you want to coach when they're gone, then you won't have any like really, really close friends on the team. It might be easier for you to kind of assert yourself as an assistant coach. And so I came back after a year away of being at Parkside. And Coach Razzle was, I learned so much from Coach Razzle as a player. But half the time with Coach Razzle, when you're a player, you're just so angry at him because he's so intense and he's yelling at you and you don't at the time, you don't realize all he's trying to do is make you a better player. Right. But then as a coach, when you came back and you worked as he made you work really, really hard. But, he also like showed his gratitude when you would, you know, stay late in the office and grind some film with him or cut some film with him and, you know, go watch somebody play or go recruit. And, those 3 years with Coach Razzle were awesome. And, when things happened with him at Mac, I was ready to sort of just kind of, I was coaching Blessed Sacrament at the time. I was ready to kind of step back and Amos got the job and Amos asked me and I talked to Coach Razzle and Coach Razzle gave me his blessing that he wanted me to help out with Amos. And at that time, and then I got 5 more years with Amos and, you know, Amos was great. He let me really spread my wings. He, he made me the offense, like the sole offensive coordinator. He made me an associate head coach, and it just each year it kind of, my love kind of grew. And I was lucky. I had it was just me and my girl, like my wife, but she's my girlfriend at the time. We were living in a house. She was doing her PhD. I was working at Mac and in finance, but also working basketball. So I could dedicate a lot of time to it. And, and 2 years ago, my last year at McMaster, I said to my wife, our son was almost two. I said, this is probably going to be my last year being an assistant coach. Like, it's just hard because I feel like I'm missing out on a lot of things with Ben. And then the Waterloo job came open, and I was like wishy-washy on whether I should apply. And she said, if you ever want to be a head coach, you got to apply. And then at that moment, I said, you know what? I'm going to go for it. And I went all out, and, really, really fortunate and lucky that Rolly Webster and Christine took a chance on me. And, I haven't worked a day in 18 months, and there's been a lot of struggles, but I feel like so much energy coming into the office every single day. And, I work with great people, and I truly believe we're going to turn this around. Just a matter of time. But yeah, it was one of those things where I'd never really set out to be a coach until kind of that last year. And then having a great mentor in Coach Razzo, for those 3 years made me want to be a really good coach. And, I was also with Blessed Sacrament. We had a lot of success. Manny Furtado and I coached Blessed Sacrament together for like 5 years. And now we get to coach against each other in the OUA. Like, it's so freaking cool. Like, it's unbelievable. The opportunities that have presented themselves basketball wise over my life.
So you mentioned Coach Razzo as a mentor. Do you have any other coaching mentors?
Yeah, absolutely. My high school coach, Paul Baker, he coached me. I played senior for 4 years for him, and I've kept in touch with him, Coach Razzo. And then ever since I got this job, the coach who won the national championship at Waterloo in 1975, Don McRae, who's in his 80s now, is absolutely just tremendous, tremendous man. He just comes sometimes, just pops in my office, doesn't even announce it. I'll be on the computer, I'll look over, he'll be sitting on my couch in the office, and he'll close the door and he'll just start telling me stuff. And he's sometimes in the office for 2-3 hours, and it feels like he's in there for 10 minutes. And he just telling me stories where how they used to do it, how what he sees and everything, and really, really supportive. And it's great to have his mentorship. Tom Keyswater's been great, the former Waterloo coach for all those years. So, I have a lot of people who are in my corner. And another guy too is Mike Cates. Ben Cates and Mike's son, who played at Mac with me. Ben's one of my best friends, one of my closest friends. We're in each other's wedding parties, whatever. And Mike Cates has been a great mentor. We've talked a lot about building a program at a high academic institution, which is what he did at U of T. And, he's been great. And, those guys. And there's a couple current CIS head coaches that I talk to on a regular basis, Manny, James DeRuin up at Ottawa. Those guys have been great, and they lend their ear whenever I get down. And whenever I feel like there's no light at maybe at the end of the tunnel, they're always there to give me a swift kick in the butt and tell me to keep grinding forward, which is what we're trying to do.
Well, and a couple of the names that you mentioned from the school you're at now, Keyswater had some success there. But McRae, when you were a kid, he built a powerhouse. And they were nationally every year right there, and that place was packed. And, it was an exciting time. I was – my mom was playing at Laurier at the time, believe it or not. When I was in early high school, she went back to Laurier.
Okay.
And she actually played for the women's basketball team when she was in her mid-30s.
Oh, so, my God.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And at the time, Bob Urosevic had...
One of my assistant coaches.
There you
Bob
go.
One of my assistants.
Well, you go tell Bob we talked about this. So Bob went from Waterloo to Laurier.
Yeah, which we tend to bug him about that.
And even back then, it was far more of a sin, if you will, than it would be today. Like, it was taboo. So he went from Waterloo to Laurier. At the same time, my mom was at Laurier. So we actually bought a second house, and my mom was living in it during the week up there going to school. And then she'd come home on the weekend with us when she didn't have basketball. Or as a grade, 7, 8, 9, I was up in Waterloo hanging out kind of with the Bob Jurosevics and the basketball team there.
That's amazing. And
Waterloo was, I mean, it was a powerhouse. It was a place to be, and it was, you know, it was pretty neat. So
yeah,
it can be done there.
For sure. And you know, we talk about that. We talk about that all the time with recruits and stuff. Like, we show them, you know, what's been done here before, and, you know, and how, if you just, you know, recruit the right people and develop them and stuff, it can be done again. And there's enough smart, academically inclined basketball players around that you can build a really good program. McGill has done that in Quebec. You know, Queens, like, Steph's doing a great job at Queens, and that's a really tough school to get into. John Campbell's doing that at U of T. Like, there's models and there's teams out there that are a couple years ahead of us that there's no reason why we can't be as good as them down the road, right? So, yeah, that's you know, there's, it's been done, and then we're hoping we can get back to the levels that you know, Coach McCray once had the program at.
If you could have the perfect style, if you want to describe it as that for yourselves, if you could build your perfect team, what type of style would they play?
Yeah, I want to play fast. I want to get up and down the court, especially on the offensive end. Like, I want to move the ball, you know, and get like, move the ball, have everyone involved, and shoot good shots. And then defensively, is, you know, if you're taking good shots and you're making shots and you're shooting a good percentage, you can get back and you can really dig in the half court and you know, become a very good half court defensive team. I'm not a big, like, fan. I mean, this could change if we get the athletes or get the depth, but right now we're trying to concentrate on building it from the half court, you know, from the 3-point line, or a little bit of standards from the 3-point line back towards the basket, just defensively trying to dig in. But yeah, offensively, I want to move the ball. I want to get it up the court, throw it inside, play off of that, and then just take sort of the first good shot that presents itself. I don't like, you know, the ISO ball that we end up doing sometimes, just like, it happens. But we got some guys who are really willing passers and really willing to move the ball. And when we do, it's a wonderful thing to watch, because we usually, you know, it's funny, you know how it is in basketball. You move the ball and you get a guy an open shot. Like, most of the time they're going to reward you by making that shot, right? It's just kind of the basketball gods and how they work. But, yeah, I think that's how I want to play. And hopefully, as we keep getting the right players and the right kind of guys in here, we can continue or start to play a little bit more like that on a consistent basis.
So we end each of our podcasts with something we call the full court press, and I throw some easy questions, softball type questions at you, just looking for real quick answers.
Okay, sure.
And we'll end off on that. So you ready? We'll see if you can break this press.
Okay, let me have it.
All right, offense or defense?
Offense.
Up 3, 5 seconds to go, other team has the ball. Are you fouling?
Yes.
If you could be an assistant for a day to any head coach in the history of any sport, who would it be for?
John Wooden.
CIS or U Sport?
U Sport. Begrudgingly.
The politically correct answer.
Yes.
All right. You're from an academic school. Square root of 36.
6. I'm a finance commerce major, so that was easy.
You better answer that. All right. You prefer to watch college or pro?
Pro.
All right. And finally, you touched on Coach Razzo and Manny Furtado and Amos Conley. The coaching tree with yourself is pretty immense. We're going to add in some other guys. What I want to know is, which one of these guys do you prefer to beat the most? Oliver at Windsor, Connolly at Mac, Kissy at Brock, Furtado at Lakehead, Ajir Lometto at Redeemer.
Well, I will. I've only beaten one of them. I will say Furtado at Lakehead.
All right. Well, when's that game?
Not until February, like the last weekend of the year. We go. You think the York Queens trip's bad? Check this one. I'll give you real quick. We fly to Lakehead, play Friday night at Lakehead, fly back Saturday morning, play at Guelph Saturday night. So
And for those listening here, before we taped, we were talking about the trip that Waterloo just took this past weekend, where they played York Friday night and then had to drive up to Kingston and play Saturday afternoon. So, and now they come home and play right away again Wednesday. So the schedule maker hasn't been real kind to Waterloo this year.
That's okay. It'll all even out, hopefully, at the end of the day.
All right. Well, hey, I wish you all the best. I'm sure you're going to have success there. The attitude, the enthusiasm, the positivity is through the roof. And I think that's important elements to building a good program. So thanks for taking some time with me tonight, and wish you all the best in building that program.
Thank you, Brian, very much, and all the best to you as well. Thank you.
There you have it. It's no secret that being a head coach at that level involves long hours and a lot of hard work. As you can imagine, it takes a strong love for the game and a desire to develop young people to keep your sanity. Coach Gunter has a passion for basketball and a leadership style that will result in success. It hasn't taken him long to understand that bringing in good people will create a strong culture. Look for the University of Waterloo program to continue its rise under his direction. Did this episode remind you of a coach you've had or a basketball experience you've shared with someone? If so, we'd love to hear about it. You can go to coachcallstimeout.com/stories to share your story. We're looking for stories about coaches who are creating fantastic memories for their players. Help give them the recognition that they deserve and possibly get their story told on this podcast. Again, you can go to coachcallstimeout.com/stories to share your story. If you've enjoyed what you heard, we'd appreciate if you could rate us on iTunes or share this episode by going to coachcallstimeout.com/19. Here at Coach Calls Timeout, we're a basketball coaching resource built to help coaches improve their personal and technical skills. If you're interested in what we do, we have more resources than just this podcast. You can go to coachcallstimeout.com to learn more. There's even a free 7-day trial of our membership program you can take advantage of as a podcast listener. Just use the coupon code PODCAST when you're signing up. We currently have over 100 video plays and drills available for all game situations, ages, and skill levels. And we're adding more videos every month for our members. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll be back again in 2 weeks to pick the brain of another great coach. See you then.